You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Sean Garmer, Gary Vaughn, and Randy Isbell.
Hello and welcome to another Football to Football. And we are starting off right this second. As soon as I introduce my co-host here with the National Championship game post-game. And then we'll talk about the NFL wildcard games that happened over the weekend. And we'll kind of look ahead a little bit. We'll do our preview on Thursday, but we'll go ahead and look up a little bit and look at, you know, maybe some of the teams that lost, what they can do for the season. And then we'll talk about, one coaching hire and some of the things that are going to be happening in the next week, like the decisions that we made on St. Louis, San Diego, and Oakland, whoever's going to L.A. and all this stuff. So we got things to do in this show. Shouldn't be a very long one, but we'll see how it goes. And of course, with me today, Mr. Gary Vaughn.
Hey, happy to be here.
And Mr. Randy Isbell.
Oh man, what a game tonight.
Yes, certainly much better than those games leading up to it. Those semifinals were not the greatest things on earth, but, you know, at least we got what I think everybody wanted with the championship game here, a game that ends 45-40 with Alabama winning. I mean, you probably watched more of it than Gary or I did, Randy. I was kind of in between with Raw and having to do some other things. I mean, what did you see here from both teams?
You want to talk about two teams putting it all out there, from just the play on the field to the calls from the coaching staffs to, and this is exactly what I was hoping for in this game. Clemson's offense definitely looked like it was confusing Alabama at first. Again, Deshaun Watson, the way he plays quarterback is a lot different than most of what Alabama's going to see in the SEC, and they really kind of struggled with that for a little while. But give Alabama full credit. I mean, Derrick Henry goes completely nuts. They just completely lean on him. 36 carries, 158 yards, three huge touchdowns, including the one late that really kind of sealed the deal. Talk about O.J. Howard, who gets five catches, 208 yards, and he scores two touchdowns in this game, which are his first two touchdowns since, 2013, I think they were talking about, because of just all sorts of injuries and stuff that have kept him off the field. And, I mean, listen, Alabama just made the bigger plays. I think both teams played extremely well. You can't really look back and go, you know, Clemson did this and this and this wrong. Listen, it came down to three plays. It came down to the onside kick decision that Alabama made when they were in a tie game, which was perfect. Nobody saw it coming, and it was the perfect kick for it. Followed right up a play or two after that where the Clemson secondary gets confused and they hit it for the touchdown. And then a little bit later, right when Clemson tries to get back into it, Alabama gets the kick return for a touchdown and really continues to just keep their distance. So just all around wonderfully played game. I'm sure, you know, the Clemson players are going to be down about it for a little bit, but really, when they look back, I mean, just one hell of a national championship. I mean, you just hats off to both teams.
This is exactly what we were wanting, right, guys? I mean, the playoff system, sure, and you could, you know, have people point out, hey, at the semifinals, not as great as you would want, possibly. But at the same point, I think it built to where we're at now, where we have this great matchup. The best teams were in the final. It wasn't a team that really didn't belong there. And I think they both proved a point here that they're ready and they're contenders, and that they both had a great shot at being the champion. I agree with a lot of what Randy was saying here. And the one thing I take away from this game, if you want to sum it up, is Clemson couldn't handle the big play. The big play killed them tonight. They couldn't stop it at times, and it was just their end. Let's just say it that way. And looking at this game, though, I mean, I think there's a few decisions here on Alabama's side that, at first you question, especially that onside kick, but it ended up turning out very well for them. The one thing I got to ask you, Randy, though, coming out of this game, I think that, with 14-14 was our score at halftime here. Yeah. And there was a chance for, Clemson to go ahead and take the lead. Of course, they were unable to do that. But there was something else that you got to point out in that play was they had actually spiked the ball the clock kept running. Referees ignored it, and then they ended up charging Clemson with the timeout. Do you think there's any way – this is a huge game, and I think that you're going to have people in the papers writing about it even though it's not going to matter. This is a very minute thing. But at the same point, it's another situation where the refs aren't getting things right. Do you think that's going to play any part in the media tomorrow?
Oh, it's definitely going to play some part. I mean, the way the game ends up, I think you're going to get distracted with all of the good to kind of look back at that bad. And what you're talking about there was Clemson completes a pass for 11 yards, gets the first down, and in college the clock is stopped until the ball is placed on a first down. Well, once the play was blown dead, the clock runs for another 2-3 seconds. They stop it. And then probably 2-3 seconds before the ball was spotted, this clock started running again. So it cost Clemson a good 5-6 seconds. And then during all that confusion and Clemson trying to figure out what was going on, they decided that Clemson used their last timeout because they were trying to make sure the clock was stopped. So they used the third timeout. It would be nice if that was reviewable, if you could go back and like fix the clock. I mean, I know in a lot of replays, they'll go back and go, okay, he was out of bounds here, so let's fix the clock to here. It'd be nice if they could do something like that. But in that instance, too, I mean, yes, it's the ref's fault. It's the clock manager's mistake. But if you do go back and give him that extra time, you're basically giving Clemson an extra timeout because that delay is going to be used like a timeout. So it's tough to balance it out because if you allow it that way, then you're hurting Alabama. So it's one of those. It's a human error that really probably cost Clemson 3 points. But I mean, it's tough to fix.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, once again, we get stuck in these referee blunders and people get stuck on that. But you got to look at the game as a whole. And I just, once again, I want to elaborate that both these teams played very hard. But at the same point, I mean, Alabama just seemed to, every time Clemson had something, Alabama had an answer or they had a big play to fix the problem, and that was to get back ahead in the game and to make sure that they stayed ahead there at the end. So I just, got to commend both teams. I'm so glad we got a good championship game here. I was concerned because you heard everybody talking before this game. Alabama's already got this in the bag. This is going to be, no worries for them. It was a worry. And if you were an Alabama fan for the first three quarters, you were on the edge of your seat. And in the fourth quarter even, at some point you were a little nervous because – even at 11 points ahead in the game, you kept hearing the announcers talk about the Texas-USC game from years ago where Texas was down by the same amount. I think it was 11 as well, and Texas came back and ended up winning that game. So that's a good thing when you got both teams on the edge of your seat. You got all the people that aren't even fans of either of these teams on the edge of their seat. That's success if you ask me.
Yeah, I think, you guys kind of pretty much covered it. I mean, Alabama was bigger on some of the, things that are coaching decisions with the big plays. And the onside kick, I think, really is where it turned around for them. It looked like Clemson might be able to kind of overtake things. And then right when, things are really close, you have that onside kick happen. They're still shocked. That touchdown happens. And just things kind of steamrolled from there where Clemson was still fighting, but it just wasn't enough. I think props go to Alabama. It's wasn't one of these defensive games like we thought Alabama might do. It's just Clemson showed they obviously deserved to be there. They stayed with them for a lot of the game, but Alabama started to get to Watson pressure-wise, and that started to affect things. And, you know, so, I mean, and likewise, you know, Clemson was kind of getting Henry down too. So they were controlling some of the key points there. Mm-hmm. And I think it's certainly something that, you know, we should really think that it's not like, you know, one team was way better than the other. They definitely proved that, you know, 1-2, it was a great matchup. And, you know, hopefully, you know, next year we're already talking about both of these teams being able to be in the same spot. No.
Yeah, definitely. And just a couple more things before we do get out of this college game. I want to throw a couple things at Randy as well, because I just got to mention this. Clemson did a pretty darn good job at getting a hold of Coker, but it seemed like Coker held the ball way too long for portions of this game. I was surprised that wasn't a bigger effect, especially since I didn't expect that much pressure on Coker.
Yeah, they definitely caused havoc, but I'm with you right there. I think that, once again, that's just – That's college football right there, where a quarterback tries to do too much, tries to hold on until something happens. And I mean, to his credit, I mean, no turnovers, no interceptions. Sure, he got a few sacks because he held the ball too long, but at least he wasn't forcing it into things.
You're exactly right, and you know, I look at this as something else. And we're talking about quarterbacks, Watson. You'll have to tell me who the MVP of this game was, because I don't know if they officially named one. I can't remember in the championship game if they actually named one as an MVP. But saying that, if Clemson would end up winning this game, you got to give it to Watson, in my personal opinion. Did a great job, you know, with whatever he had. This guy did, you know, excellent. The 4 touchdowns for him. He did make some he did have an interception, I know for sure, in this game. But at the same point, I just think that he played pretty well. But, you know, I'm sure Alabama – I'm trying to think who would have been. I guess the let's be honest. You know, the Heisman Trophy winner probably should have been the MVP if he's not already named that of this game.
Yeah, I think that's who got it, or who's going to get it, is Derrick Henry. I turned it off during the post game to kind of prep for this. But, yeah, I mean – they completely leaned on that kid. Like I said, 36 carries. He's averaging 4 yards a carry. He busts the first touchdown run for what, 50 yards, and then, you know, he a second effort to get that last touchdown to put them back up by 2 scores with less than 2 minutes to go. I mean, just completely showing why he was the Heisman winner for sure.
Definitely.
Yeah, so that's all you had there, Gary?
Yeah, that's just a couple of things I want to mention before we get out of it. Thank you, Sean.
All right. Well, let's, I guess, move on to talking about these NFL games, and certainly had an eclectic bunch throughout the 4, as we thought they might be, you know, just with the different teams playing each other. You had... one divisional matchup, and it showed, and you had, you know, the other matchups that we all knew about. Some of them went the exact way that we thought they would, and one of them was not even close, and I guess we'll start there. It's Houston, and Brian Hoyer made me look like a total idiot. 4 interceptions and a fumble in this game. Pretty much the Chiefs just wrecked house, and... I mean, it wasn't like it was out of reach because of that. It was like, what, 20-0 for a while, even? I mean, which is something certainly not insurmountable, but just Brian Hoyer was having a terrible day, and he was only able to really throw it to DeAndre Hopkins. I mean, we've seen them kind of use their offense a little bit better than that, and just the Chiefs were just all over everybody else.
You know, Sean, you know, it's so funny because you mentioned you're apologizing for Brian Hoyer, but I'm the one who really should be crying about this, because I was the one at the beginning of the season ramping this guy up, how great a quarterback he was at Cleveland, and they were not using him. They didn't have the talent around him. He comes to Houston, has more talent around him, you know, barring the fact that they'd have, you know, Arian Foster go out and guys like that. But at the same point, I mean, he just really embarrassed me as well. I just thought more of this guy. At points, you're like, man, maybe Brandon Whedon can do better.
Well, calling in right now is Mr. Harry Broadhurst.
What's up, guys?
Hey, man.
What you calling to talk about today, Mr. Harry?
Well, obviously, as you know, I do the reaction on Monday, so I didn't have a chance to watch the Alabama-Clemson game, although I did catch the very tail end there. And I did want to ask you real quick, because I did see it during the commercial break on Raw, the onside kick. I hear a lot of arguing about whether it was legal or not. What did you guys think about that?
I don't know the exact ruling. I know why a lot of people think it's not is because it didn't hit the ground. I know, obviously, the Clemson coaching staff thought it was illegal, but it seemed like, at least on the broadcast, that it seemed like it was fine. They definitely more questioned on the broadcast whether it went 10 yards, and it went about 15. I don't know exactly, again, especially in the college rules, if it has to hit the ground or not.
Well, I know that under NFL rules, as long as the ball travels 10 yards on the kickoff, regardless of how it does so, it's a live ball, free for whoever grabs it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so that's what I figured.
I would imagine that those rules would probably be the same in college. But anyways, no, I'm calling to discuss the wild card weekend. I don't know how much of that you guys have gotten into already.
We've only gotten to the first game, and Gary was apologizing for saying that, you know, Brian Hoyer was going to be some great quarterback or anything. But, you know, at least he didn't do as bad as I did, and I was the only one that picked Houston to win, and they didn't even put up a fight. So, I mean, they did, but then Brian Hoyer would throw interceptions. So,
Can I get my quick thoughts on all four games?
Go ahead, man.
All right, I'll get my quick thoughts on all four games, and then if you guys don't mind, I'll predict the four divisional games as well.
Well, and you know, let us know what do you think about Rob Ryan joining his brother there.
And I forgot to yell at Rick about that tonight on the reaction, too. Because he said it was going to happen when they got fired as the defensive coordinator in New Orleans, and I told him, you shut your dirty whore mouth, and sure enough.
There you go.
Has this ever happened before, that they're both together on one team?
I don't know, and I really would rather it not happen in Buffalo.
Well, I mean, you can't really deal with what's happening. It's already happened in Buffalo. I mean,
I'm just saying I'd rather it not happen in Buffalo. Greg Williams had our defense running hummingly. We were top five in the NFL in total defense for 4 years in a row under Williams. And then now Rex Ryan institutes the 3-4 instead of the 4-3 we were running. And going into the Week 17 games, I don't know how we finished coming out of it, but going into the Week 17 games, we were 20th in total defense.
Wow. Yeah. So, it's a fall from grace.
Not to mention Rob Ryan's defense in New Orleans was a dumpster fire last year.
It's been a dumpster fire for more than New Orleans.
I mean, when your offense scores 51 points, you should not win a game by three.
Yeah, true.
Referring to the New Orleans Giants.
Yeah, I know what you're referring to. But it's just, yeah, that's the way his defense has been. Right, even before Rob Ryan, though, the Saints were like that. So I don't know that's so much him. Go ahead, sorry.
Real quick, I just want to give my thoughts on the four wildcard games and then predict the divisional games.
All right, go ahead.
All right, Houston, Kansas City. I saw a Kansas City win coming. I didn't think it would be this dominating. I'm really shocked they didn't pull Hoyer at halftime. He ended the game with a quarterback rating of like 12 and just looked lost out there, frankly.
Yeah, he did. It was a shame. Like I said, I was the one apologizing along with Sean about him. But, man, I don't know where his head was. They probably could have pulled the backup in and done a lot better. I just don't understand where he was in this game.
It's, you yeah, don't have, I mean, Harry, you don't have to wait for us to respond. You can just go ahead to the next game or whatever whenever you're done with your
phone. Oh, all right, just real quick. I kind of heard you guys laughing about it, but I honestly feel like Brandon Weeden would have done better in that spot than Hoyer did. Hoyer was having flashbacks to being back in Cleveland during that game.
I mean, you know, at that point, I think he just went with – because at halftime it wasn't that big of a lead. He might have felt that, okay, 13-0 is not a big deal. I mean, you go to halftime, you think you make some changes, maybe getting some rest and whatever. They come with a different mindset, and it doesn't happen. And, you know, at that point, what can you do? I mean,
all right, so are there two bigger groups of thugs on defense than the Cincinnati Bengals and the Pittsburgh Steelers? I don't think so after watching that game Saturday night. And my thought process are, I understand Burfict's suspension for the hit on Antonio Brown, even though I don't necessarily think that the way that he hit him was on purpose. Brown just happened to turn into Burfict right as Burfict lowered the shoulder and caught him flush in the head. That being said, if Shazier isn't suspended for his hit on Giovanni Bernard, something's wrong. Because that was the only legitimate helmet-to-helmet hit in the game, and it wasn't even flagged. Also, Adam Pac-Man Jones clearly hasn't changed. He's still a punk, even though Joey Porter shouldn't have been on the field in the first place. Seattle, Minnesota, I feel bad for Blair Walsh, and it's not his fault. It's the holder's fault. You cannot have the laces facing the kicker on a game-winning field goal. You cannot do it. It is the worst mistake that a holder can make, and I honestly think that that's going to get him released from Minnesota. Blair Walsh was a class act about it. He accepted the blame himself, but no, the blame wasn't on Blair, especially since Blair scored all their points himself. And then as far as the Green Bay-Washington game goes, the cream rises to the top there. No surprise the Packers won. Did you guys happen to talk about the story with RG3 and the note that he left in his locker when he cleaned out his locker today?
We were going to touch on all the news at the end. Okay, I mean, we would probably touch on that one since it had to do with the playoff team, but, I mean, go ahead if, you know.
No, it's fine. I was just going to say, I was going to ask you guys where you think RG3 ends up next year. Because it's not going to be Washington.
Well, obviously not. Jerry Jones is already making me upset with his leaving the door open for either him or Manziel. So, you know, he needs to just get over the fact that they play for Texas teams and think about the fact that neither one of them is probably going to help the Cowboys. So just, you know.
And at that point, are you really willing to give up on Tony Romo? Because
not that you're giving up on Romo, but it's just like, are they really going to get better sitting there watching Romo? And all of a sudden, like, RG3's knees are going to get better, or Manziel's going to stop drinking. Like, I just don't – I don't see it. You know, it's
– Gary, you're a Cowboy fan. What do you make of all this?
I think, you know, the RG3 thing, the talk in Dallas, I honestly think it's a smokescreen. Jerry's going to say that about anybody. He's probably said that about Joe Montana, and Joe Montana is way retired. You know, let's just be honest. I don't really see this happening. If Manziel,
hey, we know
comes,
he liked Manziel though.
Yeah, but Manziel basically going to Las Vegas kind of put a tombstone on that situation. I
don't know. I still think that he did on purpose.
He can do it on purpose, but I see Manziel in New York before I see him in Dallas. I just don't imagine it.
In New York with the Giants?
With a new coach, with a new Giants coach, anybody, I don't care who, I just don't, Dallas, trust me, they're going to try to go, he is going to get slandered in the media so bad. He's already been burned up in the media this year.
Hey, but this is the same team that went and got Greg Hardy.
No, Greg Hardy's a different situation. He's actually a talent. He's actually someone that's proven himself in the NFL. Manziel has not proven one thing in the NFL yet.
Hold on, Randy, you're not part of this team, like, caring about that team that deeply. What do you think?
What about Manziel going to Dallas?
Yeah.
No. I mean, it's a mess. I mean, I don't think Manziel should be on any team, to be honest. But if he's going to need to be stuck on a team, you find him, put him in some podunk town. Cleveland was good. And he still messed it all up. I mean, he'll find his way to Vegas anyways. But,
well, you know what? Yeah, like, you know.
If you're looking for headlines, of course, you put Manziel on your team. That's what teams did for years with Tim Tebow. I mean, and that was because that brought all the media. Now you're going to – Manziel is a new Tim Tebow, just the exact opposite. You bring him in there for headlines even though he's a train wreck. He's not a good quarterback. He's not – he has no idea how to get his life figured out. I mean, he decided he just wants to be a college frat boy for a while. So it's a mess. I don't know why you'd want him on your team.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I get it. People, you know, are pointing to Jerry because he locked him in first. My personal thought is Jerry says a lot of things. And,
Glenn is saying, yeah. I see Manziel unemployed or in rehab before he goes.
You know what? I agree. And to Glenn,
it's a legit possibility.
Yeah, I'm just saying, you know, Manziel is the NFL's version of Jeff Hardy. He'll show up to the Super Bowl drunk if he can.
Oh, boy. Poor
so,
Jeff Hardy. He's,
yeah.
He shouldn't get lambasted like that.
Well, you know.
He sees
we're talking
learned.
Wrestling on the football podcast,
well,
Gary.
I know. I'm talking because Glenn.
Oh, and, to be fair, yes, there was one other situation in Arizona in 94-95 where they were both – part of the defensive Rex was the defensive line and linebackers coach, and Rob Ryan was the defensive backs coach. So,
yeah,
this happened before.
I want to answer the RG3 question, Harry. You brought it up. I just had a vision in my mind, and this just came to me. I'm not a clairvoyant. I don't know anything, but I just saw RG3 in a Baltimore Ravens uniform.
They tend to like that kind of quarterback. I mean, they had Tyrod Taylor down there last year when Flacco was hurt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he was there for 4 years with Flacco.
I honestly would not be surprised to see RG3 end up in Buffalo.
Ooh.
And the reason I say that is because if Griffin can stay healthy, he's still an elite-level quarterback, and I'm not sure that Tyrod Taylor is there yet. Taylor had a good season for us, but I don't know that he's there yet.
Really? You think he's – I don't think it has to do with it. I think he's not an elite-level quarterback, not with his knees. He can't do what he used to do. He can't run like Tyrod Taylor.
No, at this point in his career, probably not. Which, that reminds me, since this is the first time we've been on the show together since it happened, Randy, I'm sorry.
Thank you, man.
Oh, man, I'm not really sorry. Anywho, all right, so time for some quick predictions here. Seattle goes to Carolina and wins.
Oof.
Arizona beats Green Bay, setting up an all-NFC West finale for the NFC Championship game, which runs against the Royal Rumble. Real smart, Vince.
What week is he going to put the, Royal Rumble in February?
Against the Pro Bowl.
It's always
against the Pro Bowl because don't nobody give a crap about the Pro Bowl anyway.
The Royal Rumble is that same week almost every year. That's silly. All right, go on.
Anywho, and then for the NFC games, I think the two home teams win, New England and Denver, although I think Kansas City keeps it really close against the
Okay, well, you can't just leave it there. You got to go on and predict the rest of it because we don't know if you're going to be here next week. You know, you may not be here next week, you know.
Well, that's true, too. Arizona over Seattle for the NFC title, Denver over New England for the AFC title, and Carson Palmer gets a ring.
All right. That's good. You joined Gary and I as picking the same Super Bowl pick. So that's,
And I'll tell Paul that you picked against his Broncos. Just to
did
that,
we all picked against his Broncos.
I know. I just want a little heat to happen there. This way, you know. Just,
yeah. That's,
well, if Paul ever decides to show up to a Wrestling Unwrapped to the Max pay-per-view free catch show, he can confront me about it himself there.
That's mean. But we know he'll be on the WrestleMania one, at least. Anyway, yeah, well, thank you.
Is he going to be there for the Rumble in 2 weeks?
I don't know. I haven't talked to him about it yet. I mean, he knows when these pay-per-views are. If he doesn't want to ask off, that's on him, you know? I'm sure he would rather make money than do something that doesn't do... doesn't make him any dollar bills, you know? So...
Well, listen here, Leaser. You need to show up.
Well, this is the wrong podcast to challenge him. He probably never listens to this, so... but, Oh, so one more thing. You know, this is the big prediction that we were going to make because this should be decided. Actually, I think they were supposed to meet No, they'll meet tomorrow and Wednesday. Who winds up in L.A.?
Do they take one or two, do you think?
They seem hooked on having two.
If it's two, it's St. Louis and San Diego. Oakland stays in Oakland.
All right.
It's one, it's probably San Diego.
All right. So,
although apparently Roger Goodell was not happy about any of the proposals.
No, he was not. But, you know, they're going to have to just deal with one. No, they weren't happy with any of the proposals as far as, like, them staying where they were. Yeah.
To be fair, Goodell is a bit of an idiot.
Well placed the beef there. You're right. I mean, it's like this is the thing that they're going to have to figure out too when they get to that team that doesn't get picked. How do you make sure that they're going to be okay when they go back to their old city? Like, I think St. Louis would be the one that's okay, but like Oakland, do you really want to keep playing in that stupid baseball stadium forever? I mean, like, that's a thing. And then I just can't see any situation where San Diego goes back to San Diego.
I see no situation where San Diego goes back to San Diego. That's why I say they're the ones that go if they only take one. As far as Oakland goes, I feel like there's enough support in Oakland for the Raiders that they would be able to get a stadium if the fans pushed hard enough for it over there. Because, as you and I both know, that O.co stadium is just garbage.
Oh, boy. I hate watching games in that thing.
I have a couple friends that are Raiders fans. We actually share a mutual friend that's a Raiders fan, and Christopher Hale, and even he'll be the first one to tell you that stadium that they have out there is just not suitable for an NFL franchise. Hell, it's probably not suitable for a Major League Baseball franchise either at this point.
Apparently Glenn says screw you. Because he doesn't want St. Louis, the Rams, to leave St. Louis, obviously. So.
if they take two, St. Louis is going to be one of them.
Yeah, St. Louis apparently has the most attractive stadium.
And hopefully they can hire staff for St. Louis that won't set their dome on fire.
Yes, that would be very important. The San Diego Oakland has... Bob Iger at Disney working for him. So, and supposedly the word on the street is that they're favoring San Diego and Oakland right now. But who knows? I think honestly, even though they don't come out for the game, like I wonder if that will reinvigorate the city to come out for the games if they keep them in St. Louis. We'll have to see. I just know Stan Kroenke is going to be one angry mofo if they don't get picked. That dude gets angry about a lot of things. I don't know that you want to mess with him too much. But anyway, Harry, thank you for calling and joining us here. And, of course...
Absolutely glad to do it.
Of course, you can listen to Harry here right on the WTO Network for that Wrestling Unwrapped every Sunday at 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock, depending on if football's going on. So,
yeah, we're smart enough not to run against NFL playoff games, so we usually start at 9. That being said, we'll run head-to-head against the Pro Bowl. I don't care.
Fair enough.
Yep, you'll probably get more better ratings, Harry.
Yes.
that would be a dream.
Our star power will be much better, too, because anybody who's anybody doesn't play in the Pro Bowl.
Yeah. Oh, man.
All right.
All right, guys. Have a good night. Enjoy the rest of your show.
Thanks.
Later.
Later. Well, good thing is we'll have less news to talk about later.
we can briefly cover it again, but we'll just be quick.
Shoot, I think we just pretty much covered everything. Might as well just go ahead and talk about Adam Gase and then be done.
Yeah. Randy kind of stayed back. We'll kind of give our predictions. Like, I'm really curious what Randy has to say about that stuff. So,
all right, we'll wait till the end then. But all right, so, I mean, pretty much the Chiefs, we know what they did. They manhandled the Texans. setting themselves up really nicely against the Patriots now, and Bill Belichick has already come out. Well, obviously, we know Bill Belichick likes to play some mind games, but he has come out and said that he doesn't see a way to really attack the Chiefs. So we'll have to see. Even though the Patriots got a lot of good news, basically everybody that was injured except for Danny Amendola should be back for that game. So should be very interesting when we get to that on the weekend. But I'm moving on here to that Steelers and Bengals game, which, you know, Harry already talked about the Vontaze Burfict hit, the Ryan Shazier hit that was not called even on the field. Then, you know, you had the Joey Porter incident that, you know, just cost the Bengals the game there. What do y'all think here? Obviously, two teams that cannot stand each other, and they showed it plenty in this game. Randy, what do you think?
It's one of those games. It's tough to talk about because it was just both the emotions were way too high for this thing the whole way, especially late in the game. But very fun to watch for the first three quarters. You know, just a lot of hard hits, just both teams not only wanting to advance but really wanting to eliminate, you know, their big rival. But obviously everyone wants to talk about the ending and just the craziness. I kind of agree that, listen, Burfict is not the cleanest player. He has like over 100,000 fines for
got another $50,000 fine
on-field incidents and stuff, and I think maybe his three-game suspension gets knocked down to two, maybe. I mean, we'll see how all
that
goes.
His fourth safety rule violation this season.
But I'm kind of in the minority here too, where I don't see the intent there. I mean, Antonio Brown goes up for the pass, he misses it, stumbles, and his head comes down. Burfict, it doesn't look like he leans in with his shoulder. I mean, he brings his arm up and just hits him in the head, but it doesn't look like he lunged at him. It doesn't look like, you know, he was aiming for the head, which I think is why Cincinnati blew up like they did, was because he felt like, yes, I hit him in the head. It looks really terrible because then Brown is laying on the ground forever, which I don't know if I agree with their opinion that Brown faked it or faked the concussion to get more out of it.
How do you fake a concussion is what I want to know.
Well, because he was able, like, he's up and moving the next day. Like, he acted like it was worse than it was, and they took him off the field to test him for it, and I'm sure he's going to pass.
They're saying not, actually.
Oh, he's not?
The reports right now are saying Big Ben plays, Brown does not look good.
But so, like I said, I'm not, like, fully into that scenario, but I don't see the intent of it. Obviously, the penalty gets thrown because it looked so severe. But, listen, you got to compose yourself in that situation. Take your 15-yard penalty and move on. They were unable to do that. It does look really bad on the coaching staff there. It does look like Marvin Lewis is going to keep his job, which is good. But that is something he is really going to have to figure out, is how to control the emotions.
I don't know. Doesn't that prove that he shouldn't, since he couldn't control his team there when it matters most?
Hey,
I
predicted right after it happened. I was in another Facebook group with a bunch of guys that I play football with. And I said I thought that was his job right there, that he was going to lose it, because not only can they not win a playoff game, yes, this time with a backup quarterback, but now he's shown that he has completely lost control of his players. And, you know, I think I felt like that was going to be his downfall. But obviously, I think he's shown enough to them where they're going to keep him around for at least one more year.
Yeah. To me, when you're talking about Marvin Lewis, you're talking about a guy that's intelligent, a guy that has built a team. In fact, if you ask me personally, he's done a great job on the defense, even having some guys that have been questionable. Adam Jones being one of those guys. But he's made the best of it, and he's got those guys motivated. we don't know what those guys were talking about in the locker room before they got in that field, but I guarantee you they told them, hey, these guys want you to lose. They don't want, you in this league. Let's go out there and give them as much heck as they're giving us. And I'm sure that's where it came into play. I think that they did lose their cool. It's a rivalry kind of game. You're going to lose your cool at times. So it happens. It's not Marvin Lewis. I don't think that he lost complete control of his team. I just think that both sides were doing things they shouldn't have. And let's be honest, Cincinnati got caught for more of them. So they're the story here. This game was very interesting to me. I really thought, at first that, Pittsburgh really was going to find a way to lose the game. I just thought that they were going to do that. Despite the fact that Big Ben was keeping him around, I thought, A.J. McCarron was looking fine in the first half. But, the reason I really felt like the Steelers were going to win this game was because of A.J. McCarron, and he ended up proving me right a little bit in this game. I just thought the game was a little bit too big for him, and it ended up being that way. Now, saying that, it took a personal foul to lose the game for Cincinnati. That's really what this boils down to. So I think the Cincinnati defense played their butts off. I think they worked hard. If you ask me personally, the Steelers have some of maybe the best receiving core in the league, with a quarterback that has been there. He's experienced. He knows what he's doing. And they were able to control that to a point. So that's what brings me to this game and says that, I was almost wrong on this prediction. And the only reason I got it right was because a guy screwed up and had a personal foul call. And, that's just the way the cookie crumbles sometimes. And, you got to feel bad for Bengals fans. I definitely understand it. Man, you've been there, and every time you lose the first round. I think, if Marvin Lewis is able to get things done right, I could definitely see him being right back again. I just hope this time they're actually able to win a game in the playoffs.
Well, I feel bad for Bengals fans, except for the ones that were in that stadium. I mean, I think they showed as little class as some of the players did there at the end. So
I can't deny that, Randy. You're completely right. I think that they, took some points from the Blue Jay fans this year.
Yes.
Yes. I mean, when you're looking at this now, for the Bengals, I mean, there's already talk, apparently, that Hugh Jackson might be interviewing for the New York Giants job. And he has been vital to the Bengals' success over there on offense. How much of a loss would this be for the Bengals if they lose him?
I think it's pretty significant. I mean, their offense is really starting to gel. I mean, they're looking better, and Andy Dalton definitely has looked pretty well this year, and I think that says something for the system because I think, let's all be honest, unless you guys are fanboys for Andy Dalton. I've never been one. I'm a big TCU guy because Big 12 is part of my group there, but. On the same point, Andy Dalton does not make me think, top 15 quarterback. And this year he's been amazing, and I think it has a lot to do with that system. I don't think it's just Andy Dalton catching fire because he's Andy Dalton. So I think it would take a step back for the Cincinnati Bengals losing him.
Ian, what do you think, Randy?
I think it's going to be a big loss too, but I don't think he's going to end up in New York. Again, I said it last week, I thought Tom Coughlin's going to end up there. But I think Cincinnati, that's going to be their main focus, is figuring out how to keep him on the staff because, like you guys said, it's such a huge part of that team.
Yeah, he is, and we'll see if they can make the pitch because, Hugh Jackson probably felt it from last year, and now he feels like, man, we were so close, and then stupid things happen, and maybe he feels like, man, this is my time. Take this with what happened as a sign that I need to go elsewhere. And let's see if, the Giants take him or they don't, or another team. Certainly, speaking of the Giants, Tom Coughlin supposed to go talk to the 49ers. I think that's a great fit if Coughlin goes there. I think that's a team that with all the issues with the players that retired and he's had obviously issues with getting the defense to work, but he's got a better core defensively there with Lynch and Navarro Bowman, and you've got the two really good corners. I think he's got a nice little core there that he can kind of build around. I mean, he'd have to fit, obviously, if he goes to San Francisco, he'd have to start all over with the quarterbacks. But, you know, Nathan, who knows? Maybe he can get Colin Kaepernick out of his own head. What do you think?
Well, sure, he's a good fit as far as some of the players go and stuff like that, but with that ownership and, like, how they just ran Harbaugh off and then it's just been such a crazy mess. If you're Tom Coughlin, wherever you go, this is probably going to be your last job. I don't see San Francisco being where I would like to go as my last job is to deal with that ownership.
You bring up a good point, and honestly, Randy, I didn't put that into play. And I think that could be a big decision because, you know, Coughlin just got through dealing with an ownership and a group there in New York that, you know, he won Super Bowls with. And eventually their relationship broke down. I think he may already kind of have some insight, especially with, you know, him knowing coaches in different parts of this country. And he's probably knowing some of the 49ers coaching staff. He probably, you know, got that idea too. So I don't know. You never know. It could happen. But, you know, I'll say this once again. I think that Tom Coughlin needs to go to a new challenge. I really do. I think he'd enjoy himself more. I think he would feel like he was actually doing something really beneficial. And a team like the Cleveland Browns, to me, makes more sense than the 49ers.
I think, what are we talking about here? Cleveland's ownership is not any better.
No,
they're just stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so it's like, it's either you pick the, look, honestly, I think San Francisco works because what are you sitting there? If you're a coach and you've been a coach in this league, you should expect to have pressure. Look, this is the guy that took the Jaguars to the playoffs. This is the guy that's won Super Bowls with the Giants. I mean, the guy obviously commands respect. You know, the Maros didn't think so at the end there, but this is a guy that, you know, you run him out of town, I think the fans start revolting at that point against your ownership. You know, just
I definitely think that they gave him respect. I mean, they let him step down instead of firing him, so I still think...
Well, they were going to fire him if he didn't step down. So
they give him the respectful nod of going, hey, I mean, just... I mean, it's the same thing. We're going to fire you, but we're going in the public's eye. We'll allow you to step down so it looks cleaner and all that. But listen, I know that you're talking about how the Cleveland ownership is just stupid, but there's a lottery I'm going to win on Wednesday, and maybe I buy the Cleveland Browns, and then we'll fix it. It's all going to be good.
Hey, if we win the lottery? You know. We'll see. Oh, I mean, everybody kept saying we're all going to win the lottery last week. So.
Yeah, we're trying.
But
I said I was going to win the lottery, and I didn't get a single number right. So
yeah, I didn't either. So yeah. I mean, well, when you missed the first one, it don't really matter. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, and that's the first time ever playing the lottery. So I played it with a bunch of people at work.
It's sad. It's because someone actually asked me that question. Gary, you know, this is a guy that doesn't really watch sports. He goes, Gary, man, if you won the lottery and you won, you know, would you buy the Cowboys? And I'm like, dude, I could win this lottery and still not be able to afford them. So, you know, I may be able to buy the Browns. I may be able to buy the Jags, but I couldn't afford the Cowboys. So.
Oh, why? I mean, why would you want that stress?
I would not. In fact, I did sell them. I wouldn't buy one. But anyway.
We'll have to see. Plenty of time obviously left for a lot of these situations to unfurl. But let's move on over to the NFC, where pretty much we were a field goal kick away from the one prediction that I didn't take, the Minnesota Vikings coming away with a huge, what we perceive as an upset because of Seattle's past. And then Seattle wins. I mean, it was a defensive game. Russell Wilson was not having his best game at all. You know, we kind of know what you're going to get with Teddy Bridgewater. Marshawn Lynch scratched himself from the game before the game. And basically a broken play led to what started everything. I mean, What did you see out of Seattle here? How does it make you feel for this next game here against what would be the
Carolina? Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. Can I say this? First of all, I want to commend Sean because Sean made a good point in the podcast last week, and I was questioning it. I wasn't sold on it. But I really think the weather affected Seattle. And Sean, he said that, and I was not a believer, but I am more of a believer after watching the game. I think that, you know, Russell Wilson, obviously, not that that really hindered him completely, but I think it did affect him at some points. You know, he definitely kept his hands in those glove warmers or out of that warmer in front of his, you know, jersey. And I think, you know, it also affected the way he was able to pass the ball at times. I think it also affected, you know, a lot of different things that Seattle's used to be able to get away with, and they were not able to. So I think to a point it really affected both teams, but I think for more of it, to me, it affected Seattle a lot.
Now, we saw Peterson do his thing, fumbling the ball, which
yes,
one of the things that led to the points. But I want to say sorry to Blair Walsh because I feel like I kind of jinxed you. I was, you know, in the last word on sports, we have this little chat for the NFL, and they were just running down, and they were like, "Oh, what did you guys think about that penalty call on Cam Chancellor? Was it the right call?"
Oh, gee, I mean, it's one of those things where it was one of those things on my to-do list to go back and rewatch it before the podcast so I can give a better answer. I didn't see anything that really should have been called.
It looked like they ran into each other.
Yeah. I mean, more incidental, more just playing football. Especially with how late the flag was thrown, that I think they allowed some of the yelling to get to them, and they went, okay, well, maybe the contact I saw was illegal, and they went ahead and threw it. But obviously with the missed field goal, it becomes a moot point, so it just... I haven't really seen much of it, but yeah, watching it live, I didn't see pass interference.
I kind of saw it as looked like Cam Chancellor might have ran into him to keep him from, you know, catching it because he would have caught him and possibly, you know, got by him. So which we saw on, you know, was it the next play or the play before that where he got by him for like 20 yards down the sideline. So, you know, we'll have to see. But after that, you know, that's where they went to the 26-yard line. And one of the guys, he's a Giants fan, he started laughing. He's like, "Oh, God, they just gave the game to the Vikings." And I said, "Hold on, because I've done a lot of Viking games on Ravel, and I remember watching plenty of times where Blair Walsh missed." And I said, "Blair Walsh has missed a lot of kicks this year. Don't sit there and say the game's over yet." And then what do you know? He misses it. And I'm like, "Oh my God, that's not what I really wanted to happen," but whatever. It's just, I mean, God, I feel so bad for that guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and obviously you just feel bad for everyone on Minnesota because listen, this game was like old school football at its finest, very defensive. Neither offense could really get anything going. Minnesota settles for 3 field goals early on, so there you go. Blair Walsh has all of their points, including, a 46-yarder with the same laces problem that people are complaining about or whatever. But listen, Seattle made the plays at the end that really mattered, that crazy breakdown play where the snap was terrible and Russell Wilson has the wherewithal to pick it up and scramble and find a wide open locket to get down to the 2. And then you had the fumble by Peterson that allows Seattle to take the lead. And just, it was one of those things where you just knew it was going to come down to one play. One mistake by one of these teams was going to cost them. And unfortunately for Minnesota, they were the team that had the fumble. They were the team that missed the chip shot field goal. And they're the ones that now get to watch the rest of the playoffs at home. Give full credit to Seattle. Extremely tough place to play with how cold it was. I love some of the imaging that who ran this? This was a Fox game, right? That Fox had showing throughout the game, like one of those big guys with a crazy beard, and half of his beard was frozen over from all the spit coming out of his mouth, and just one of those crazy old school sights that you rarely get to see these days. So it was a really fun game to watch. Obviously, living in the Northwest, I would have loved to see Seattle lose, so you know I can stop hearing Seattle fans go over the top with this stuff. But I mean, call Seattle lucky for missing that, for Minnesota missing a pretty easy field goal, but they definitely kept themselves in the game. They made the plays when it mattered, and then unfortunately for Blair Walsh, something went askew as far as the kick goes, whether it was nerves, whether he, as going through, he saw the laces were in the wrong spot and he messed up, or if the ball slipped a little bit or anything like that. But in the end, listen, you got to make those plays. Like he said, it doesn't matter what happened. He has to make that kick. So just a terrible way to end a really fun defensive battle.
Definitely. The one thing I want to say, too, is, you know, not only did the cold affect these two teams, but it also affected that Vikings horn, shattering it into pieces. Well, what did y'all think about that? I thought that was kind of funny that happened.
I missed it.
You didn't miss that? Y'all didn't hear about that?
Oh, I hadn't heard about that news.
They said that the horn actually broke because of the cold. It was so cold, and the vibrations and the cold destroyed it. So, I don't know. We'll have to look more into that. But that's what I was hearing from my camp.
Well,
so
that's good, because that first sound noise that they make drove me absolutely nuts when I had to review their games this year. That, especially when you're watching it in the condensed version, so it's going really fast. Every time they blew that thing after every first down, I wanted to mute my computer. Just was driving me insane.
I knew it. I knew you would enjoy that. So, I mean, you guys may have to spot check that, but I'm pretty sure that's what I was hearing. So that's just crazy. But that shows you how cold it was.
Yeah, it was pretty damn cold. But you know, finally we move on to the last game. The Green Bay Packers certainly liked what happened there, where they won against the Washington Redskins, a game that was close for a major part of it, and then the Packers kind of just pulled away. It looked like it was going to be another one of those games. Glenn is confirming it did shatter, apparently.
Okay, yes, thank you. Thank you, Glenn.
So, I mean, they looked like it was going to be one of those games where Washington, where the Packers were going to be the Packers they've been this season, and Washington might win the game. DeSean Jackson making a stupid play where he didn't make sure that he got inside the pylon was one of the factors. And, you know, then the Packers finally woke up offensively. They also got involved defensively, making Kirk Cousins giving a problem with Kirk Cousins. What did you see out of this? Just Washington not ready for prime time, I guess.
Yeah, I think it's partially that, and it's partially this was in the end the perfect team for Green Bay to play in the first round, because Washington has struggled defensively, and it allowed Green Bay to kind of work themselves out and actually look like a competent offense in the second half. I mean, I was watching this game with a girlfriend, and I turned to her at one point and went, where has this running game been all season? Like, the numbers end up not being amazing. 63 yards for Eddie Lacy, 53 for James Starks, but it looked like they were running better. It looked like they were finding holes a lot easier, and they were controlling the ball, and that's what we have been saying all season has been really hindering them. Is it's Aaron Rodgers with no help. They have no running game, so the opponent can just blitz the hell out of them, and the offensive line is so bad that Aaron Rodgers had no time to do anything. So it's one of those things that I'm really curious to see next week, whether it was the Washington defense being so bad or maybe Green Bay finally figured something out. If they have figured out something, then Arizona better watch out, because this is the Green Bay team that we were worried scared of at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, Randy, on that, because I'm with the same questions of, is this really that Green Bay team we remember? And, you know, let's be honest, I don't think anybody sitting here right now really believed that Washington was going to win this game. I think, Randy, you did pick him, didn't you, Randy?
I did pick Washington, because I really thought Green Bay's offense was just going to be in so many shambles that it was not going to work out. And at the beginning of the game, that's kind of how it looked. It was just Washington was going to do
this. So did you tell the girlfriend that you picked Washington?
No, don't tell her. She gosh, she does not listen to this podcast.
Yeah. Ooh, man,
you've been fired right there.
Yeah.
No, so. As far as she knows, I still have a Kansas City Green Bay Super Bowl.
So. Ah, okay. There you go.
Hey, you know, it could still happen.
Exactly. Randy's still in
the Oh, my God. Really? What if that, I mean, like, seriously?
If that happens, Randy definitely deserves commendations for that, so.
Man.
But, you know, this is one of those things. But I'll be honest. I think a majority of people looked at Washington, thought Green Bay. Green Bay struggled, but Green Bay just seems like they're a better team just overall. And I think that's what kind of happened here, from my personal opinion. I think Washington hung around as long as they could. Eventually, things broke down and they couldn't handle it. That's my personal opinion on it. Washington was amongst the NFC East of, hey, you know, who can play the worst? And they all try to play the worst. And at the end, you know, Washington couldn't handle playing the worst. So they got a chance to go to the playoffs. So that's why I didn't have any faith in them. Sure, they've done some great things this year. You got to commend them. Kirk Cousins, wonderful job this year. Their defense, you know, stepped up at times, but overall, you knew what defense you were going to get, a very average defense, and that's why I think Green Bay had a chance to win here, because Aaron Rodgers, given average defense, he's going to find a way to win.
Yeah, true. That's the thing is, you know, Aaron Rodgers finally overcame all the issues. I think also, you know, Redskins defense, missing Chris Culliver, I think they were missing one of their linebackers or whatever too. I mean, they weren't, and then they haven't been one of the best defenses for a lot of the year either. Certainly one of those defenses you can pass on. So, you know, that's the only thing I feared was that either they wouldn't be able to keep points with each other, or you know, you have Aaron Rodgers not have one of those games where he actually looks like Aaron Rodgers, and then you know, here we go. But the thing with Arizona now is they have a whole game of tape to watch on you. And how are you going to come at them differently in this divisional round? Same place again, you know. So, they played in Arizona last time. It's just, I just can't see it being a blowout twice. You know, that's a hard one. But who knows? We'll see what happens when we get to Thursday and we have to talk about these games and everything. But now looking at these teams that have lost, certainly I think you have to say Houston has got to just go in the draft, use free agency, and you're going to have to – you need to go find a quarterback because Brian Hoyer is not the answer, obviously. Maybe you keep him as the backup. I don't know. Maybe you just let Brandon Whedon stay there and you move Brian Hoyer on. I don't know. But, I mean, or do you go another way in free agency and you draft a running back since Arian Foster is so up and down? Do you draft another receiver to be there with DeAndre Hopkins? I mean, where do you think you go if you're Houston?
I think you do all of the above. I think you go out and draft a running back maybe in the middle to late rounds and then go find another possible veteran in there as well to really bolster that running game, because Arian Foster has basically proven that he's not going to last the whole year. So you need to make it a committee, and I think that would work a lot better for them. They do need to go out and get a quarterback, whether it's a different veteran or they bring in a young buck through the draft or both. And then, yeah, you definitely need more than one target to be effective. And so I think they go for all three. I think they really need to stick to the offensive side of the ball. The defense is pretty much solid, so now you need to work on the other side.
What do you make of the Jadeveon Clowney being benched before that game?
You know, in a way, it it's, I think a lot of it is psychological with Clowney. He's definitely been injured quite a bit. And then, of course, everything that he's doing down there in Houston is not what they expected. So seeing him be benched, it's a situation where you're like, man, there's so much talent there, but he just cannot get on the field because of different variations of issues, injuries.
I mean, do you take him storming out of the stadium as being passionate about wanting to play or being dumb?
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say it's more passion, because everything he's said since then is he's just really wanted to be out there and play. And so being told that you're not able to is has to be frustrating.
Yeah, I think you're right, Randy, on that. And, you know, you do get frustrated, but he has to understand this is a profession, this is a business, and they're making business decisions. And if he wants to be on the field, he needs to get his body there, and he needs to make sure that he's mentally there as well. So, you know, I just think it's up to him.
For Cincinnati, what you're looking at here, we should note that they have a bunch of defensive free agents that are coming up, and namely Reggie Nelson, who's tied for the lead in interceptions for the entire season. Also, Leon Hall, their corner. Pac-Man Jones, also possible free agent. Two of their receivers, Muhammad Sanu and Marvin Jones, free agents. Vincent Ray and Emmanuel Lamore, both of them. So, if you're looking at guys you need to keep, do you keep the receivers? Do you keep the – what are you looking at here?
Well, I think at this point you're trying to keep the guys that can keep their head on their shoulders at this point. I think Adam Jones is gone just for the fact of that penalty. Sure, he's a talented player, but when you get eliminated because your players lost control the way they did in that game – and now it becomes character becomes a huge thing. So I think that's where you see Cincinnati really focus in the offseason is character choices by some of these guys on top of everything else. And listen, I mean, you guys do the wrestling podcast too, so we'll do another wrestling reference. They need to go hire that guy that helped Kane and Daniel Bryan a few years ago. I can't think of that guy's name.
Yeah,
they need to bring him in. I don't know how much he would cost, but just bring him in and just make that team work together. Have them sit around and draw pictures or whatever they did during all those skits. But other than that, it's just I think they need to start weeding out some of these bad apples and finding other pieces to fit in there.
It's time to hug it out in Cincinnati. Yeah. I think you're right, Randy. You know, that's the wise way to go, character decisions. And I think Marvin Lewis will try to make those. I think also they're going to be definitely evaluating the talent just by itself. And sometimes you're willing to deal with things if you got the talent there. I think they'll be cutting their losses with some of the guys that they feel like, you know, are making a lot of money but are, you know, only providing so much. The guys that are really providing a lot, like Nelson, I fully expect them to stick around. It'd be hard for me to believe they're just going to cut guys like that. So it'll be interesting. This is the worst part of GM's job, and that's getting rid of good players because you just don't have the cash. But we'll see. Cincinnati, you know, has a lot of big decisions to make.
I think the other two are much easier. Washington, you got to get some defensive studs. You've got issues on the defensive side. D'Angelo Hall, I think, has proven that he's sort of really reliable, or unreliable, honestly. And you know, you've got to just get some. You got Ryan Kerrigan there, and he seems to be like your only consistent guy. You can count on, really. Everybody else, I mean, Culver was great before he got hurt, but there's just, I don't think, not enough. But Jason Hatch is thinking of retiring now. I mean, it seems like you've got a lot to do with the defense. What do you guys, you guys agree? Or?
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. They are figuring things out. Maybe go out and get another receiver. I think you're pretty solid on the running back situation with some young talent there. But yeah, it's that defense is what really cost them in that game. It's really what they need to work on and fix, especially when you're in that division with some good quarterback play and some good offenses. I mean, that's what you focus on most is how to defeat those three teams and get yourself as up to six wins every year by really focusing on them.
Yeah, and, you know, Washington's trying to upgrade their defensive line over the past few years, and they've gone on and got veterans, but those veterans have also been leaving teams that, you know, they were minorities on that team. They were not the best pass rusher on the team. They were just, you know, doing well but not being the best, and they spend a lot of money on those guys. They need to stay away from spending a lot of money on those kind of guys and spend on if they're going to spend big money, spend it on guys that actually do make a difference in the game. Or, you know, maybe you draft some, but they definitely got to get to the quarterback. That's one of the biggest things I see with Washington. Got to work on that a little bit more.
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, Dan Snyder has gotten a little smarter about not just throwing money at people, which was that was his problem when he first got there as the owner. But he definitely, you know, you need to keep drafting guys. And I think, you know, receiver you take low in the draft. You have, I think, three solid receivers, and you got Jordan Reed. I mean, you've got a core there. And I think Ryan Grant's not that bad, so I think if you're going to draft a receiver 6th or 7th round, everything else, you go all defense. You need to replace it. Not just replace, but you need depth defensively in case you lose someone. And obviously for the Vikings, I think we can all agree here, you got to get Bridgewater, somebody besides Stephon Diggs to throw to. Mike Wallace, Charles Johnson, not cutting it.
You think that maybe they could woo somebody from their own division? Maybe they can talk Calvin Johnson and come in back for 1 year and play him for them?
Well, you know, do you guys really think Calvin Johnson is going to retire, or is this a whole tactic to try to – I mean, you can't really pay him more than he's already getting paid. I mean, so, you know, obviously he knows they're going to ask him for a pay cut probably. I mean, they do have a new GM there that they just hired, and that's got people, everybody talking about Jim Caldwell, if he's going to lose his job. What do you think if you're Calvin Johnson? I mean, let's be honest here. We have had players, we've seen it already. We saw it last year. Players retire early. Not everybody has to play until they're 35, 36, what, 40, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you just have to stick to the same team and look at Barry Sanders. I think a lot of people probably, when he was talking about this kind of stuff, went, okay, yeah, sure, he's just looking for more money. But he wanted to be able to enjoy life after football. Football wasn't everything for him, and that's just the way it is. As far as Calvin Johnson, obviously none of us know him personally, so we don't know exactly where his mind is at. But I do believe it's probably more of a ploy, maybe not to get more money, but maybe to get himself in a better situation as far as a better team. By going, listen, I'm not taking a pay cut, so either you cut me or I'm going to retire. I don't care. And then maybe they do cut him or they trade him.
Anybody would, yeah, I was supposed to say, you think anybody would come after him for a trade with that contract?
And anyone that is really that one piece away. I mean, I have no idea about cap spaces and stuff, but the one team that always jumps out at you for those guys that are trying to pick up that one extra piece is New England.
Oh my God. Imagine Tom Brady throwing Jesus.
Exactly.
It's Randy Moss all over again.
Because they're not worried about draft picks. They always figure that stuff out. They're already trading all of that stuff all over the place. So if they have the cap space, which I don't know because I haven't looked it up yet because we haven't quite hit the offseason, but if they somehow could fit him in their cap, they would give up a bunch of draft picks so that Tom Brady now has Calvin Johnson and Gronk to throw to all year.
Oh, jeez. Talk about how do you stuff that team?
You just wait for them to break down and get hurt. I mean, that's what you do with every major team.
Exactly. And let's be honest, you know, Calvin Johnson's not young, and he's taking a lot of time off from,
season. He's 31. He's mm-hmm. he's not old, but he's not young, you know.
Yeah, think of DeMarcus Ware. That's what you got to think of. Guys like that who've been around the league for a while, their bodies are not as strong as they used to be, so you've got to go ahead and plan on them being out 4 to 6 games at some point.
Well, do you think this new GM affects Jim Caldwell at all, or do you think he stays? Or
I don't think he gets rid of him yet, but, I mean, if they don't perform this next year, I'm sure he will have a quick trigger.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just, you know, the ownership group is, you know, they're really just sitting there saying, hey, we love Caldwell. We love him. You know, let him stay. So that year could mean a lot, but we'll see. I mean, it's a good, interesting debate.
Well, the last thing we got to talk about before I bring Glenn on here to talk about is Rams, which I guess he can go ahead and call while we talk about this. But Adam Gase, you know, offensive mind extraordinaire, the new coach for the Miami Dolphins, a team that went through turmoil, obviously, you know, fired Joe Philbin after the London game. It worked for a little bit with Dan Campbell. Then, you know, the reality set in and they just proved to be just a mediocre team. What do you think? I mean, obviously their strength is they have strengths on both sides of the ball. You know, with Ndamukong Suh, with Cameron Wake, he comes back healthy. You got Olivier Vernon on that line. You got defensive back problems you got to deal with. You got some decent linebackers. And then on the offensive side, you have receivers. You have Lamar Miller. You have, you know, Ryan Tannehill is the one that sticks out. You think that Adam Gase can finally figure it out with Tannehill?
I think that's their goal. I mean, obviously, you know, he was there with the, I believe my timing is right, where he was in Detroit when they had a very young Matthew Stafford there. And then, you know, he's the quarterback's coach and offensive coordinator there for Denver. And then he's worked with Jay Cutler in Chicago. So I think they're looking at it going, okay, he knows his quarterbacks. He knows how to work with them. Because, listen, Jay Cutler this year really stepped his game up after losing Brandon Marshall. And you have to look at Adam Gase as a huge part of that. So, absolutely, if you're Miami, you're looking at him going, okay, if Tannehill's going to be anything, Gase is going to find it and he's going to find his true potential. So I think that was their main thing going, we have the pieces. We need to get focused and we need our quarterback to play better. And so bring in a head coach that really focuses in on that could really help.
Yeah, definitely. And you're going to need a guy that definitely can help the quarterback because we know Tannehill needs all the help he can get. I mean, he's a guy that, you know, has performed at an average level and has had some good games at times, but just not been that complete quarterback that's going to put them to that next level. So anyone who can help, even if, you know, he brings in some other guys to assist him in the project of Ryan Tannehill, I think it could, you know, be a good favor for the Dolphins and for Tannehill.
And I just looked that up. I was incorrect. He left 2 years before Stafford was for the Lions.
Okay.
All right. So before I let Glenn say his piece here, let's make our predictions. What are the teams? Or the team, because there's no guarantee it's going to be two, goes to Los Angeles.
I'm going to say it's the two California teams. I have a hard time right now thinking that St. Louis is going to win it. I think the Raiders and San Diego, and of course the San Diego Chargers, will soon be over there in the same stadium, and I think it'll benefit both teams. Not only that, they're natives to California already. It'll help the fan base stay there. I know there are Rams fans out there. Trust me,
Sean.
Yeah, no. Well, yeah. But, Sean, I mean, I remember, I'm not sure if you remember, but in Dallas Cowboys training camp that they have in California every year, they actually had people at the practice where the Rams were practicing with the Dallas Cowboys wearing L.A. Rams gear. I'm not sure if you've heard about that.
Yeah, I mean, that's, so, you know, Matt mm-hmm. Pollard, who, you know, used to be a co-host with me on this podcast when we did the soccer. He's also a St. Louis Rams fan, mm-hmm. and you know he's told me this, you know, that he personally, for him, because he obviously a lot of his other team, you know, all of his other teams except for Miami, because that's where he went to school, is in L.A. So he'd obviously love to see the Rams come back to L.A. and all that kind of stuff. It's what his dad grew up on, all that. So, you know, obviously dissenting views here with somebody who lives in St. Louis and doesn't want to see the Rams go and Glenn over here. But
yeah,
I kind of agree. That's the thought process I've had all along, is that you would go ahead and take the teams that are already native to that state. Obviously, Oakland, leaving Oakland is a bigger deal because you have the, you know, black hole and all the fans that are there that go to those games, and they make that a place you don't want to go to. But also you look at the stadium and it's not somewhere you want to play. And then you look at San Diego and that place is just terrible. You know, but I just Stan Kroenke only agreed to the partner thing as like a desperate plea of, okay, please, like, just, will you take me if I say I'll go ahead and give you can have another team there? But he doesn't want the other team. He mm-hmm. obviously just wants the Rams. And I just,
what do you think?
You know.
What do you think, though, that, I mean, do you think he's going to give up all those things just to, and that's just, I mean, I guess
he's, I mean, he desperately, he wants to move so bad. I mean, that's why he's got the flashier deal. He's got the better looking stadium. I mean, all that stuff. I mean, the Chargers and Raiders were desperate, and they went and got Bob Iger to like, basically, hey, look, we got a guy that basically he knows how to make something awesome in Disneyland and all that stuff. I mean, look, pay attention to us now. I mean, just, this is crazy. This is going to be funny to see tomorrow and Wednesday, or, well, later today and Wednesday, what they decide on. They have to get 24 votes. So we'll find out, I guess, when they had the meetings and see if which teams are making it. But we'll obviously get to talk about it on Thursday. Yeah, but,
Randy,
Glenn,
Randy,
sorry. What do you think?
No, I'm kind of right there with Gary, where I think San Diego's, I think, the closest thing to a lock as far as a team moving to L.A. And then I honestly think the Oakland players are begging to go to L.A. just so they don't have to play on an infield anymore. I think out of the three, St. Louis is the least likely to go, but it wouldn't surprise me. Just the fan base is actually starting to come out in force of trying to keep them there, and the new stadium idea there and all that. I think even the NFL doesn't want to move a team from, you know, the Midwest all the way to LA and lose that market completely. Like you guys were saying, a move from Oakland or San Diego to LA really doesn't change the market that much. So I think it's going to be San Diego for sure, and then maybe Oakland.
All right, Glenn. I'm going to agree with you guys on that. I think they keep the Oakland, San Diego. I just can't, for one, I can't see them going, oh, we're going to move San Diego, and then we're going to move St. Louis, and they're going to partner, and they have nothing with each other. At least they are in the same division. You know, I mean, well, obviously the Jets and Giants don't have that. You know, they're different conferences completely. But, I mean, you know, I just think that you run a bigger deal. Like, you're going to bring San Luis all the way back to L.A., and you bring San Diego over there, and it's like, this is just weird. I mean, you know, but what do you think, Glenn? Like, you're living around there. Do you think that that's really going to happen? You think St. Louis is going to be that team? Or,
well, the thing is that the main concern is the fact that we would be drawn the short straw in this whole deal. I would personally, I wouldn't really care if the Rams left, only if there was the promise that we would be getting a team in return. Like, I mean, I wouldn't care if we got the Raiders or if we even got the Chargers. But if you take them away from us, leave us with nobody, oh, hell is going to hold a very, very special place for you, Enos Stan Kroenke. And by the way, on the off chance that somehow he gets a hold of this podcast, just remember, your first and middle name are in tribute to great St. Louis Cardinals players, Eno Slaughter, Stan the Man Mutual. Just remember that not only are you burning us, but you're also burning every bridge you have even made in the St. Louis business area that have sponsored you and have done so many things to just even try to get something done.
Well, I mean, that's something I don't think anybody's considered. Do you think that they would send one of the other teams over there? Like, say, a San Diego, who they don't want in San Diego, and it's obvious they don't want in San Diego?
You know, to me, I mean, in my personal opinion, I don't think that they're up for that. I think that San Diego really, honestly, just like the Oakland Raiders and just like St. Louis, they want the big, big market. Not saying anything bad about St. Louis. St. Louis got a great – it's
no
really
offense.
A great sports team. No, and it's a great sports town, but yeah. – It's like anywhere else. L.A.'s one of the giant markets. I mean, I guess New York's the biggest market. I think L.A.'s the second, if I'm
right.
Yeah,
they are. You're
yeah,
right.
So, I mean, that's the second market. They're looking at that. They're not looking at
Yeah, and
to
they
go...
have a team in every other sport, and they have two in basketball. Yeah. So, you know.
Yeah. And so my point being is I think that they would be wanting to go somewhere with a big market. They would not want to go into St. Louis. I don't think they would want to even go, you know, to, let's just say Buffalo or anywhere else crazy in this country. I think that they want to stay in these giant markets. If they can't, I think they'd rather just stay in San Diego.
I just don't see it why would you send another team that way?
Mm-hmm.
It's either you keep St. Louis in St. Louis or you bring them and you have to make a whole new team for St. Louis or you kill Sandy. I mean, look, we've seen it happen. I could definitely see them just killing the Chargers, period, and you make a new team in St. Louis like they did with Houston, like they did with Cleveland, even though Cleveland had they just brought back the old team. But, you know, they made a new team in Houston when the Oilers left and became the Titans over in Tennessee. So, I mean, I think Glenn has a good idea. I just don't see how that would make any sense.
Well, if I may give a little perspective, I'm going to kind of steal a little thing from Adam Cole. It's going to be story time with Glenn. So
okay.
My personal earliest memory from way back in late 1999, well, I'm sorry, actually early 2000, I was almost three. That was the year that the Rams were in the Super Bowl.
God, you're making me so old here, Glenn.
Yeah, oh yeah. But it holds a special place in my heart because that's really one of my earliest memories of the Rams was this little Super Bowl party we had at my house, and every couple of commercials I'd be running with this Mylar balloon-sized football, and then remembering like how big of a celebration there was when Mike Jones made that famous tackle at the 1 yard line. That was, I mean, I really didn't understand how awesome it was at the time because hello, almost three,
yeah.
But I mean, just realizing there was so much emotion. I mean, that's why we even still refer to it in St. Louis as the greatest show on turf. We have that passion. We have that drive. We love our team so much, and I think if anybody would actually saw that and not think of all these markets and whatnot. I mean, that's really why I have such a connection to the Rams. I mean, it break my heart. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, anybody that goes through that. Well, you're the. I mean, if the Cowboys had to move, I think, you know, Gary and I would, you know, go nuts. We wouldn't know what to do. I mean, my dad's had season tickets there since 1994. I mean, I haven't gone obviously since I moved to Miami, but it would kill me. Like, you wouldn't be able to call them the Dallas Cowboys anymore. Like, just that all that history goes away with that team. Just, it's crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously Randy, you know, he doesn't live in that city, so I don't know how he'd feel about the Jets not being the New York Jets anymore, but...
You know, imagine if they just started calling them the New Jersey Jets.
Yeah, I've still been waiting for that. I'm just... It would be really funny, like, if we go with that same thing where they move the Rams to L.A. and then move the Chargers to St. Louis, if they just call them the San Diego Chargers of St. Louis.
Oh, God. That's the
That's God, the equivalent.
Let's
of
not bring
on
up that dumbass name. The freaking Angels is like, God.
Oh, my God. Yeah,
come on, man. Like, I forgot about that. They got two baseball teams, two basketball teams, two soccer teams. I mean, you know, the one hockey team, and, you know, so I guess you can have one football. I mean, they would have it all whenever that happens. So,
but the other thing to look at is if it is just St. Louis that moves to L.A., I mean, they're probably going to need a new team in a few years if they ever want to expand to London. So they can have the team in London, and then they can bring in another expansion team in St. Louis.
Serious? A London team?
It's going to happen. I'm telling you right now, at some point in our lifetime, we're going to see it.
And
it's
called
the NFL for a reason. This isn't the IFL.
It's not called the American Football League. It's called the National Football League. And it can, you know, they can, hey, the NBA stretch to Canada. So it doesn't matter.
All right, Canada isn't that far from the U.S. London, that's a whole bigger fish to fry.
Hey, but you know what? That's one team a week. You're living there. I mean, it's not like, you know, yeah, you're having to travel back to the States every other week or however they're going to do that. I don't know how they would decide to do that. Maybe they do 2 weeks on, 2 weeks off, but
you would have to be adding like three or four different bye weeks in order to have that happen.
Hey, maybe that goes along with having the extra two games added to the season or something. Who knows?
All right, if that's the case, you would be needing to add.
Yeah, that means that they add a second bye week. That's what the deal was originally.
I'm trying to do the math in my head. It would roughly work out to be like close to five or six extra games in the football season if you're even going to try bringing a team to London.
Well, I mean, you know, maybe you start. Obviously, the logistics, they'll have to figure that out, but I just think that if Roger Goodell stays the commissioner, we're going to see it. Just, I don't know. I don't know what you, I mean, Randy, I know you were kind of hinting at it already, but.
If I may say, the biggest tool in the world is Roger Goodell. I mean, that's all I'll say.
Goodness. No, but basically, I think the way they would make the London thing work, like, say you're the Seattle Seahawks or whatever, and you have the London team on your schedule, the way they would do it is the week before you would play somebody on the East Coast, say the Washington Redskins or whatever, and then the next week you'd play the London team, and then the week after that you'd be on bye. So they would get you halfway there, play a game, and then you would just continue that travel over to London. I mean, there's different ways to work around it, and sure, it might look weird for a while, but I think that's where they want to go, is expanding over there. There is a decent enough fan base in that area, and then at some point we might even see a full division of just four European teams, and then who knows from there.
Jeez,
so
they had their chance, and then they lost it. I feel as if.
Yeah, but you're also
a couple of games in London. Yeah, I don't have a problem with. But if you're going to build a whole division around England, just Europe, you had that, you blew it.
Yeah, but they're gonna at some point here in about like 2 years, they're gonna have like five games in London. Like,
oh dear
God, five or six games in London, because they're gonna be doing two stadiums. So it's like, I mean, we're going to have a whole week that's basically going to be London. I mean, they could make it into a whole London week if they wanted to. But they're not going to do that. They're going to spread it out, obviously. But, I mean,
I'm just trying to think what stadiums would be even be large enough. I know Wembley is one. What's the other large enough?
I don't know. They would have to build them a stadium because I cannot imagine that Tottenham is going to be okay with sharing a stadium with a football team, which would tear up their pitch constantly. No, the soccer game is not going to tear up the pitch that it's meant for much as the football team will. That's tearing up a pitch that's not meant to be played on by football teams.
I'm just thinking of something that actually happened in St. Louis. They actually had a couple of soccer exhibitions over in our baseball stadium, and it absolutely tore up the field. They actually had to resod the entire field.
Well, yeah, but that's why you don't have soccer in a baseball stadium, but that's another thing for another day. I mean, but, you know, just, I mean, the Yankee Stadium, they had the same problem. So, to me, it's just, I don't know. What do you think, Gary? I don't know about the whole division around.
Hey, I'm okay with the division. You know why? Because I want to see the Barcelona Dragons back.
Oh, okay, I will admit.
The Galaxy.
It
all has to be in England. I can't see it being another country.
Like, I would love it to be. I don't think it would be. That's just so much travel. You know, London's far enough. It'd be difficult. But, you know, I think they'd have to really work out the logistics. It's going to be tough. I think one team is the way they'll go. I don't imagine the division thing will happen unless
I just can't. My God, imagine how many weeks of football you have to play all of a sudden if you got 36 teams. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah.
You take two away, maybe you have 34. Even then, it's still.
And don't forget that the London team would also have to play games in the U.S. as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, they would obviously be having to travel too and do all that. It's just. That's a lot of logistics you have to go through.
And that would be more times than the actual teams that they would be playing.
Right.
Because teams they'd be playing would only have to do it once. They would have to do it for half the season.
Yeah, well, and the preseason games and whatever else, you know, so. Well,
preseason doesn't count.
Yeah, but they still have to travel. So, but yeah, I think that pretty much, I think that covers everything on the podcast here. Thank you, Glenn.
Something like on the off chance that St. Louis loses the Rams and gets nobody else, Kroenke, we are building a giant effigy of you, and you know what? It shall be burned. And many, many, many a colorful adjective would be said. Like one that starts with an F, rhymes with duck, you.
Thank you for keeping it PG on that one.
You expecting something else?
Well,
just kidding.
We've had people come on here and say things they shouldn't say, you know, saying. Anyway. Well, we'll be back on Friday morning, giving our predictions and thoughts on, you know, the divisional games that are now locked in. Hopefully we'll know who has moved to LA by then, and also just if any other news comes out by then. So it's getting closer and closer to that off season.
Hey, may I actually give a couple of predictions for the playoffs real quick?
Go ahead.
All right, picking Broncos win their game. I'm picking Chiefs over Satan.
Jeez.
Yeah, I'm picking Panthers all the way to the Super Bowl. I know it's gonna piss off my uncle, but go Cardinals. So. Broncos barely lose to the Chiefs, and Carolina versus Chiefs in the Super Bowl, and hopefully if they announce how the owners voted for keeping the Rams in St. Louis or or having them leave, I will be rooting for any team that votes to keep the Rams.
What if Carolina and the Chiefs both vote, then? So who are you picking to win the Super Bowl?
I honestly, I'm going to go for Carolina. I mean, they deserve it. I mean, they almost had a perfect season. They kind of mess things up at the end, but I believe in them.
All right, fair enough. All right, well, thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Harry, for calling. And we'll see you guys on Friday morning.
Later, Orlando everybody. Pace for Hall of Fame.
Fair enough.